The tax cut that is turning into an Obamacare cut. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. As work continues in the Senate on the tax bill, Republicans are looking for ways to pay for the tax cuts they're proposing. The idea is that the Senate has just embraced is to repeal the Obamacare rule that individuals need to buy health insurance. And how does that save money? Marketplace's Mariel Segarra does some math.
Americans who don't have health insurance have to pay the federal government a penalty. But that mandate actually costs the government money because it makes people who don't want insurance buy it. Len Nichols teaches health policy at George Mason University.
You take away the mandate, they won't buy. The federal government would have subsidized those people.
And those subsidy dollars saved would add up. Getting rid of the mandate would cut federal deficits by about $338 billion over a decade, according to the Congressional Budget Office. Thing is, if the mandate went away, the people ditching insurance would mostly be the healthy ones. Jared Bernstein is with the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities.
In the long term, you end up with this classical problem in insurance markets where the people who are in the insurance pool are the most expensive. So premiums go up.
And that would mean more uninsured people, according to the CBO, about 13 million more after a decade. I'm Mariel Segarra for Marketplace.
Let us do the numbers. The 100 share index in London is down 0.7%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are all down in the 0.5% range. A guide to interest rates in America is down. The yield on the 10-year note is down at 2.33%. A bipartisan group of senators announced plans this week to make it easier for smaller banks to comply with Federal Reserve regulations. Smaller banks would get easier rules. Proponents say this would spur lending. But note that some medium-sized banks are coming up with ways to trim themselves down to take advantage of this. Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein has more.
Nobody likes red tape. Some bankers have begun to realize they can ditch their holding company structure, where a parent company owns the bank, and drop the Federal Reserve as one of their regulators. It's a strategy to boost profits when low interest rates keep bank business flat.
It cuts down on their costs quite significantly.
Lawrence Baxter is a law professor at Duke.
It's managerially a little cleaner and a bit simpler.
But there's a price to pay if banks go this route. They'll still do all the traditional bank lending, but George Washington Law School's Arthur Wilmarth says the more streamlined structure prohibits an institution from owning insurance companies and securities trading.
It can do very well as a traditional plain vanilla bank. It does not see any advantages to behave like a Wall Street enterprise.
With fewer regulators on watch, does this make it easier for bankers to engage in risky behavior? Even without the Fed, the FDIC, and others are still on the job. The real question, will those regulators keep the banks in line? I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
At auction today at Christie's in New York, the last Leonardo da Vinci in private hands. It's an ethereal image of Jesus, Salvador Mundi, it's called, Savior of the World. It's about 500 years old and had to be heavily, heavily restored. It could sell today for more than $100 million. When I called art critic and New York Times contributor Blake Gopnik about this Leonardo, he corrected me saying, Leonardo in theory.
We love the idea that something might sell for $100 million, $150 million, $200 million. We just can't do without those kind of numbers. That's what really interests us. Forget art. What we want is big, big price tags.
Now, you started out by saying in theory. There's some doubt in your mind?
You know, I saw it on Saturday, went there with an eminent Renaissance art historian friend of mine, and we looked and looked at it, and there are things in it that look very much like Leonardo. You could argue that there are too many things that look like Leonardo. It's a kind of compendium of Leonardisms. And if you were a pupil of Leonardo, what would you do? You would say, oh, right, Leonardo, the boss. He likes sfumato. He likes extreme perspectival effects. And you'd sort of add those all to a very conservative picture. Now, I'm not saying that this isn't a Leonardo. I'm also not saying that it is a Leonardo. I'm actually saying that it's a kind of incoherent question to ask. It's kind of like asking, is the moon Jewish or is the sun gay? Pictures even today, let alone in the 16th century, can be all sorts of things between being by a great master and being by some assortment of assistants. I am perfectly happy. I think it's way more interesting to say, you know, this is a funny, interesting picture that might be by Leonardo. It's Leonardo-ish is what I'd say. And I'm interested in that category that Leonardo helped create. But that's not what the market wants. The market wants yes or no answers to these questions.
You know, essentially, I was looking into the history also, and this painting sold in 1958 for 45 British pounds sterling. If you do the math, that's about $1,000 in modern money. That was a steal. But it was 1958, before Mona Lisa had gone on tour in the U.S. So, of course, it was only a grand.
This actually reminds me of a story that I recently heard, except it's not just a story. It happens to be true. I know of an art historian who was asked to authenticate a work by Leonardo. And he was going to, you know, charge the normal kind of fee you charge for doing this kind of thing in low six figures. And the owner said, no, no, no. We want to pay you a percentage of what it sells for. Now, what is the chance that any art historian, given that particular contract, is going to say, oh, no, it's not by a famous artist. It's by Joe Blow, and it'll sell for $1,000. The impetus to attribute these works to very famous artists who get very famous prices is overwhelming in the market. And it's actually corrupting the way we think about authorship. It's really messing with us.
Art critic Blake Gopnik, the biography he's writing about Andy Warhol, is getting ever closer to completion. Blake, thank you.
You're welcome. It's really moving along.
And at marketplace.org, we have a link to a timeline for the painting offered by the auction house. Scroll down on the timeline to see one of the weird earlier restorations of this, apparently Leonardo, where someone had painted onto the figure a strange wispy mustache. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.